Welcome to the Beef Educators Podcast.
Today we'll be discussing recovery from drought with Dr. Larson and Dr. Garcia. We thought it'd be a good time for us to take an opportunity to talk about recovery from drought, especially since most of the state has been experiencing some fairly significant drought over the last several years. I think it'd be a good time to talk about the recovery and some of the potential things to watch for, and hopefully get us ready for the next drought that will occur. So to start out with, Dr. Garcia, why don't you walk us through what we should be looking at from the animal husbandry end?
Well, I think that the first thing that most people fail to recognize is that we push these animals pretty hard these last 3 years. We are going to sacrifice some production on these animals just because, you know, there's compounding effects. You know, we're starting to see some of it this year with some calf loss, and I'm pretty sure we'll start seeing more of it with the rebreeding side of things. I think, you know, the fourth year going in here, I think the major problem that we're going to face is the fact that we got cows that have come in pretty lean, you know, last 4 years, or leaner body condition scores that are more suboptimal than they may have been in recent years. So, you know, I think, you know, if we're not willing, and Dr. Larson will probably talk about this, if we're not willing to really increase some of our production costs and our, you know, just the cost of production to get these animals productive again, I think we're going to see some animals that, you know, might fall out even this year, even though, you know, we've gotten some moisture, we'll probably have some grass on the ground, but I don't think it's going to be long. It's not going to be enough and quick enough to really, you know, kind of offset those compounding effects of 3 years of drought and the stress these animals have been exposed to for the last 3 years. I think in terms of what we're looking for, obviously we're looking for those animals that, you know, are able to kind of mitigate that stress and, you know, still remain productive. But I think, you know, coming out of our third year, I think we're going to see less and less of those animals because I think we've pushed a lot of these animals to their limits.
Yeah, and I think maybe an important point to make up front here pretty quick is when you look at range condition because of the drought, overall forage production declines. And most of the research that I'm able to find suggests it can take 2 to 3 years.
So the point I'm trying to make is that it takes 2 to 3 years to recover after a single year worth of drought. So we're in some parts of the state, we're 5 years. Some parts of the state, we're a couple of years. The bottom line is we should not assume we have quote unquote normal or even above normal forage production, even though our precipitation totals may increase. The other thing to keep in mind is even though we've got a tremendous amount of snowpack, that doesn't necessarily translate into grass. The grass really keys off from April, May precipitation. And then June is where you can really see those numbers go way up if we get some, you know, additional rain in June. So that all being said, as we're coming out of the drought, I think we need to be safe not to make too many assumptions about, you know, that because we've got a good snowpack and we're in that recovery phase that we're going to have extra forage in this year.
Well, I think another thing to recognize as well, and in terms of this, the animal production side of things, I'm glad you brought up the snowpack because that's another stressor that we're having with some of our animals right now. We have to remember that if these animals went into breeding a little thin, you know, they've gone gestation a little thin, but now you've thrown in another requirement on them. This winter's been tough on these animals. So not only are they trying to maintain a pregnancy, some of them are trying to raise that calf now, but prior to, you know, calving, there were some minus 20 degree days here. Those animals were spending a significant amount of energy trying to thermoregulate. So, I mean, that's something else that has put these animals, you know, kind of behind the eight ball that we really got to watch for because, you know, they're going in and calving a lot of times, especially the ones we've seen around the state. They're going in thinner than they ever have before.
Well, and that your point earlier about cattle coming in thin, the additional nutrient requirements that have been placed upon them because of the severe winter we've had, it's kind of a double whammy because we come out of an extended drought, which I think just naturally kind of depletes their overall reserves. And so you kind of bring them to a rock bottom anyway, and then you dump them into a really severe winter. It's kind of a perfect storm. And one of the things that I've heard quite frequently recently is, well, I'm just trying to get them through. Everybody, because of the cost of hay, everybody's trying to kind of squeak through, which is understandable, you know, with that expensive harvested feed. And so, you know, that's the other side of this is, what do we look at in terms of, or what are we projecting for hay prices in the coming year? Are we expecting to see them fall quite a bit because of the extra moisture? Or are we anticipating that hay prices will remain as strong as they've been?
You know, that's a, there's some compounding factors there. I think one, as we see this winter elongate over time, people are going to have to keep feeding. We're not going to get on pastures very soon. We're not, we're probably going to be delayed going up on rain. I mean, there's going to be these factors that are going to make producers feed longer. But I, you know, you start to hear around, there's some export issues that are really causing issues there. So you're starting to see the prices soften a little bit. And I think the extra moisture, people are, you know, that, you know, we're thinking reservoirs are going to be full. We're going to have full crops across the state. Our neighboring states are doing pretty good. So I think you'll see prices soften a little bit. I don't know that you're back in, I just don't see how we get below 200 this year. I just don't know. I don't think we do, maybe for really poor quality. But I just don't, I still think it's going to be an expensive year to feed anything harvested, any type of harvested forage. Dr. Thacker, one thing, you know, it's interesting. You talk to people and they're like, oh, the drought's done, right? I mean, we're done, right? It's like we got lots of snow and we're done. And as you think about those rangelands, and this is something we talk about a lot, right? And you've already mentioned, it's not one and done. And we think about the economics of that decision of taking care of those rangelands on a year-to-year basis. On a year like this, right, we're coming off a harsh year last year, and we think some snow is going to fix everything. What's some of the implications of misusing your rangelands this year?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Dr. Larson, because the thing that I've been most concerned with is, we're coming out of the drought. And keep in mind, we're expecting to see reduced forage production still continue for a few years, because whether you inappropriately or appropriately grazed your rangeland, you're losing forage production capabilities because there wasn't enough water. So those plants need time to recover. So I've actually started becoming more concerned about the grazing management after a drought, more so than I am about the grazing management during a drought. And the two things that I really think matter is, number one, the condition of your range prior to the drought. So if you were already pushing your range a little bit, then you go into the drought, then you're really behind the eight ball, right? Because your grass was already a little disadvantaged, and now you've compounded that problem. Whereas if we take good care of our grazing coming into the drought, our plants are healthy, meaning they'll have a higher potential to recover. But again, even on the back end, even with good grazing management, on the back end, we've got to allow some time for that grass plant to recover. The other concern is, you're essentially increasing stocking rates even though you don't increase the number of head. So if your rangeland loses about, I don't know, let's just say 20% of its ability to produce forage coming out of the drought in that recovery period, so you've got depressed forage production in that 10 to 20% range. If you stock it as you would during a quote-unquote normal or average year, you're essentially overstocked by 10 to 20%. So that's where you really get the compounding effects, is now you're taking more forage than you should be taking, you know, and it compounds the fact that you're just not producing that forage. So you can kind of start lining these things up to create a perfect storm to cause more damage to that rangeland as it's trying to recover. The thing, and this is kind of an overall principle, the thing I've learned about rangelands is, if they're in good condition, it's quite amazing how quickly they can respond and recover from, you know, things like drought, wildfire, you know, even heavy bouts of grazing if they're short. However, if they're not in good condition, then we're entering a situation where we may lose permanently, semi-permanently, the ability of that rangeland to produce forage. And so that's when we really start to worry, because you might lose, you know, capacity. You're just not able to produce as much forage.
Yeah, I think that brings up a great question. Kind of going back to Dr. Larson's kind of assessment on the hay, you know, if our stocking rates are down again, you know, because obviously our range isn't recovered, you know, and we're not able to you know, we're still having to supplement animals to address that shortage in natural forage, you know, with the compounding effect of what Dr. Larson was talking about, with all this moisture that we have right now, you know, am I incorrect in thinking that that hay market, because I assume hay inventories are super low right now, and that first cutting is probably going to be pushed back a little bit because of all the moisture to get out on those fields and cut. So is the hay market, I would assume, just because the demand is going to be so high for that first cutting, is that hay market probably not going to soften until maybe those last cuttings of the summer?
Yeah, that's a great point, because I think you look at where we are on stocks, right? On inventory, we're as low as we've ever been on inventory. I think there's going to be a high demand for high quality feed, right? I think there's going to be a pretty big price disparity between high and low quality, but I still think that demand, and I think that assessment is correct, and that because we're going to be feeding longer in the wintertime, we may not see those prices soften until later into the year. When if we get three good cuttings, we get a fourth cutting, we may start to see that more dramatic, that softening. But yeah, there's that supply is still driving, that demand is high and that supply is so low. That's still, in my opinion, driving the market that we're seeing. And until that changes, until we can show evidence that we're rebuilding supply, and maybe this is a year we can, but this is just deteriorating that supply even more as this winter goes on. That it's just going to, right, exacerbate that issue of that low supply and that strong demand as we think about that. Along the line of prices, ranchers are going to be in a kind of a little pickle this year, in my opinion, because prices are going to be, I think prices are going to be strong on the calf side, right? They're going to want to produce as much as possible this year. And so it's almost going to seem counterintuitive. I need to protect my range, but I want to put as many out there as possible because prices are good, right? This is going to be a tricky one to help out ranchers understanding that, although, right, they're going to be incentivized economically for the short term to put as many out as possible, but maybe understanding the long-term economic implications of preserving that forage, right? Do you see that conundrum they're going to be in?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting time, because I think the desire is, you know, calf prices are going to be up. You know, I think everybody's hoping to make up ground in more ways than one, right? They're hoping to make up ground in terms of increasing the number of animals. You know, a lot of people have sold animals during the drought, try to get by. So everybody's going to try to be returning to, you know, their normal level, quote unquote. They're going to be looking to maximize the pounds of beef raised per acre. And then at the same time, you know, they're hoping to get back to normal or somewhat normal stocking rates. And in light of all of that, I think, you know, one of the other things that I've really tried to emphasize over the last couple of years is, number one, droughts are not an anomaly. I think we often, I know I do, I mean, I look at this and think, oh, well, this is just a bad year in a stretch of, you know, several good ones kind of thing. But when you look at the data, for most of the state, kind of, so it looks like you can expect drought conditions, which would lead to, you know, somewhat significant reductions, more than 10% forage production or something like that, probably 1 in 5, 1 in 6 years. And so my point is, we shouldn't just assume this is over and we can just move on and rebuild. I think the one silver lining in this whole drought thing is, okay, so maybe you've had to destock, or maybe you've done some different things to get through the drought, but maybe now's a good time to evaluate, are my animals, and, you know, I'll kick this to Dr. Garcia here in a minute, you know, are my animals appropriate for my range? Have I got the right kind of animals? Because I think this is a good year to start evaluating. So those cows that may be losing or not rebreeding, is that just because we had a bad year? Is it because maybe they're not a good fit for operation? But in all of that, I think we also need to start asking ourselves, okay, so if I'd had to destock significantly to get through the drought, does it really make economic sense to invest a bunch of money to repopulate only to have to destock again in another 5 years? And so I think, you know, sometimes we need some disruptions to cause a little bit of a reset and rethinking. And so I think one of the silver linings coming out of this drought is, okay, as I'm rebuilding, looking at cattle prices, looking at hay prices, looking at range conditions, you know, maybe reevaluating what that optimal number of animals on a landscape is, you know, looking at your overall overhead costs, you know, how can I cut some costs? Because it, you know, rather than just trying to get right back to where you were, maybe the question is where do I need to be instead of where I was? Because the other thing that's becoming clear is range conditions have changed quite dramatically in some areas of the state, over not necessarily range condition, but we're in some cases across the state, we're seeing less precip than we did 10 years ago, 15 years ago. And so those things are all changing. So we're not really dealing with the same set of equations that we were dealing with 20 years ago, not only from a cattle market standpoint, but from range condition. And so I think it's a good opportunity to maybe rethink, you know, maybe the way the operation is functioning.
Well, and I think, you know, you hit a couple things around the head that this is going to be a unique situation. You know, we're in a herd building year in this country. After all these droughts, we're going to see people trying to start to increase the size of these herds again. The problem is price is going to go up, you know, and from what we're talking about now, hay prices don't look like they're going to soften for a little while. So blessing in disguise, I think, for the range is, I think there's going to be a lot of situations where economically it's going to be hard to bring those herds back up to that normal grazing size. The other problem I think we're going to see here is the fact that even though our markets are good for calves, we're trying to rebuild, you know, we're looking at range health, we're going to see a significantly lower weaned calf crop this year. You know, we're already seeing that with the calf loss in this winter. You know, even though we're going to have a lot of cows that there's going to have to be decisions made on, you know, because we all know that economically those open cows don't pencil out. But are we going to fall into that same trap again of, well, I got forage on the ground, I'm going to keep these extra cows that are open so that I can have calves next year? You know, I think hay prices will kind of mitigate that. But I think we are going to see, you know, less calves in the market, especially from this region, just because the losses we incurred from this winter. But it's also going to be a situation of, once again, you know, that critical evaluation of management, herds, you know, selection practices, economic viability. You know, there's going to be some tough decisions here. This isn't going to be a normal repopulation or normal coming out of a drought year just because of all the factors that are involved. There's not going to be a lot of weaned calves to select for replacements. A lot of guys aren't going to be trying to keep those calves. They have probably more value on the sale market. But, you know, I think, you know, that critical evaluation of practices has to be done this year just because of the uniqueness of our hay market, our calf market, our rangeland health, and a bunch of other things.
So Matt, I just pulled up the drought monitor just for kicks, because I remember seeing a month or two ago that parts of the Midwest that are known for producing large quantities of cattle, Texas, Oklahoma, Nebraska, right all the way up into parts of Montana, are experiencing quite a bit of drought right now. So that could speak to lower volumes there. So it'll be interesting to see how some of that integrates in terms of, you know, I know Dr. Larson's shown a couple of graphs showing overall inventories are way down, which then feeds into all of this, right? Because as everybody starts to try to recover and pick up, you know, and maybe it'll be interesting. Maybe there'll be enough cattle coming out of the Midwest where they're trying to destock that those prices won't go up. I don't know. I don't.
Dr. Larson, do you have any idea about
what'll happen with volume there?
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about how hard it's going to be to fill, potentially hard to fill feedlots this year as well, due to some of these repopulation and less weaned calf crops as well, I think.
Well, I think you look at feedlots, they've kind of been hit from both sides. They have struggled because they're the cost of corn, the feed side is really killing their profitability. And the only thing that's really maintained some of that is the demand from the consumer side, right? Processors were willing to pay, their profit margins were such, but we're starting to see that where they're being forced, right? I just looked up the feeder October feeder futures is at 221. I mean, there's some strong indications that they're going to be paying a lot for those cattle, and right to, and those margins are going to be really tight on the feedlot. I think you look at the upper Midwest, they've had some severe weather issues. So calving is going to be tough there. Drought issues in the lower Midwest, the West, California's been, I think it's going to be a really, and we're coming out of that low, super low inventory, right? So we're low inventory. All these problems are going to cause, for a producer, right, that can, the producer might be able to make some some decent profits this year, but those feedlots are going to struggle because they're going to be paying a lot for those cattle coming in. They're going to be paying a lot to feed them. And if our economy softens and that demand's not there on the other end, they may get hit from both sides. So there's a lot of risk in feedlots, in my opinion, this year. There's always, but this year there just seems to be a whole slew of risks that are really impacting their profitability.
So on the feedlot side still, I would assume this year from a heifer slaughter standpoint, we're probably not going to see those heifers going into the feedlot because we're going to have some guys trying to rebuild herds. So, I mean, is there any projections that are saying how far down we might have of inventory going into feedlots this year? Is it due to that low inventory we had now? Is it due to herd building? Because there's so many different factors this year. I mean, it seems just like this is just a unique economic and production environment that we're going to have to navigate.
No, I think producers are going to keep as many, right? They're going to be trying to rebuild herds because we have decent range, right? They're going to see, oh, we've had good moisture. Let's try and rebuild it. So they're going to try and keep heifers, but it's going to be pulled from both sides. I think it's going to be, we say this all the time that agriculture is, that's why we talk about this holistic management, because it's the feed, it's the animal, it's the economics, it's all these that go together. And I don't know that you see this in other agricultural sectors, but the livestock industry for sure. I mean, I think about feedlots right now and for them to compete and grab, because a feedlot makes money when that feedlot's full, right? If that feedlot's not chuck full of cattle, they're losing money, right? Because they need to, they are built to maximize efficiency, and to maximize efficiency, they're clear full of animals. So they're going to be in a tight spot trying to fill those, in my opinion, right? As I think you're exactly right. As we come out of the spring, I think we're going to see a lower calf crop. That's going to be 3 to 4 years in a row of decreased calf crop. So we're going to see inventory being a level that we haven't, right? That for a long time, we haven't seen 2012, 2013, right? When we saw that drought through Texas. So all these compounding factors are just adding that risk. I think the producer is going to be a little insulated from that, but their producer's still not insulated, right? As we see these calf losses and whatnot, but those feedlots and the processors are really going to face the brunt of this.
So I do want to kind of, the drought hopefully is kind of coming to an end, right? So we've talked about a lot of the negative consequences that we're still not out of the woods for certain. But I think the upside is we will see some range recovery, right? With a lot of the projections are suggesting all of the smaller reservoirs within the state should fill, which means there should be plenty of irrigation water for the first time in a long time in certain parts of the state for hay crops. And so it looks like, maybe just a very deliberate path forward, trying to, again, Dr. Larson referred to this, using a more holistic approach, thinking about how your range and your animal health all integrate together, and I certainly think there's places to be, optimistic in terms of our forage production on rangelands. We will see probably more forage than we've seen in quite a while in some cases. And again, I've been telling everybody, just, make sure you're using some conservative approaches in terms of how many animals and how much of that forage you're taking to let, just to give an extra chance for that forage to recover. I think the benefits will long outpace any of the negatives that could come from trying to capitalize on this hot calf market that we're hoping will hold through the fall. One of the other things that I think is kind of a unique situation, and I think ranchers are probably one of the most risk-laden groups I work with in terms of, it seems like there's 10,000 things coming from all sides. One of the other concerns that's arose lately is a lot of our poisonous plants tend to thrive, kind of in a post-drought environment. You weaken kind of the background vegetation during that drought. You get extra moisture. It allows them kind of a foothold. And so that's the other thing, especially with a cold, wet spring, oftentimes sets the stage for animals consuming forages that they would normally avoid, i.e., poisonous plants. So one of the other things to kind of keep on your radar is the potential for those plants, and some of these plants like local weeds, maybe some lupins, you know, these are plants in some cases we haven't seen for a while because of the drought, but we might, you know, we might start seeing their densities increase quite a bit over the next couple of years. So those are some other things to kind of keep heads up on. So Dr. Garcia, kind of in wrap up, can you think of any other things to advise producers, you know, especially coming out of the wintertime? What are some things that, you know, other?
Well, I think, you know, you kind of said some earlier that really made a lot of sense. You know, I think that right now it's a critical time to really evaluate that herd. You know, I think we fall into the trap that, you know, we've been downsizing, we've been selling animals, we need to put more in. But I think at this time, I think maybe that just a change of thought is, you know, maybe if this is a time when we try to build that core kind of, you know, production system compatible group of animals that we can build on in the future. Cause we're going to, like you said, we're going to see this again. This isn't the last time we're going to see this. And we had some animals come out of this that were remained productive for this whole scenario. So I think at this time, you know, maybe instead of falling in that temptation of bringing animals in from other places to increase our numbers, maybe this is a time where we kind of try to see what we have, who was resilient, who was productive. And we use those animals to build out a little slower and more sustainable wise, you know, kind of going forward. I do think one of the things that we do need to look for, and this is something that I always say, is we need to be evaluating how those cows held together. Body condition score, you know, is a great tool to kind of evaluate those animals. Obviously we're not going to have anybody winning any shows this year coming out of this winter and this drought, but we're going to have some animals that are productive raising calves. With this extra forage, maybe this extra forage we're going to see this spring or this summer, maybe this is an opportunity for us to kind of replenish that smaller group of animals, that core group, this production system adaptable and, you know, able to mitigate this stress, you know, get them back on track because we know they're going to last, and then maybe start selecting replacements off of that and within our own system going forward. So when we do see this again, we have a core group again that we can kind of mitigate this stress to not just be production system, you know, destroyed, or, you know, just kind of going forward, we have the right animals in the system.
I think those are really good points. One of the other kind of final comments I had for Dr. Larson is, how are interest rates impacting all of this? I know, you know, that's been in the news a lot lately with interest rates going up. How does that really affect this drought recovery phase of livestock operations?
Yeah, we haven't talked about interest expense and the issues of debt for a few years now, just because interest rates have been so low. But, you know, we're starting to see interest rates 7-8%, maybe even 9%. And if we're buying feed, we have to take out a little more debt, right? Like all these issues are going to cause that interest expense to go up. If we're trying to expand and buy land, it's going to be more difficult. So once again, that it's not a major expense, you know, when we look at those expenses associated with operation, but it has the potential, though, if we're in that 7-9%, it still is going to impact profitability. And so it's not a feed expense, but it's still, right, those little expenses add up and you increase interest expense, and that's just going to start eating away at that profitability and cause some issues. So definitely as we go through the year, we're going to be watching interest expense and see what happens. And but that's just one of those other high feed costs, higher interest expense. All those just start adding on top of each other. Machinery costs are up, fuel costs are up a little, right? Each one of these just add a little and squeeze that profit margin, right? We say agriculture is off always a margin industry. What's that profit margin? That just makes that margin so that much tighter when we do that. You know, I think one of the key takeaways for me is thinking about, you know, we've been in this drought mode for so with the presentations and everything we talked about. I think, Dr. Thacker, you hit it when we said maybe coming out of drought is one of the key decision periods for a producer, right? That year after drought, you know, because what's our natural inclination? Oh, we're out. Let's go back to everything as normal, right? That's the year we say, hey, this is like Dr. Garcia said, this is a great year for us to assess and say, okay, what are we doing to prepare for the next drought? What are we doing to preserve our range? There's some key questions this year that need to be answered, in my opinion, from a producer's perspective.
Just one of the last parting shots, something that we've done a couple of programs with Jay Olson from Snow College recently. And one of the numbers that he put up recently that really stuck chat with me, and Dr. Larson's talked about this quite a bit, that harvest and feed portion of the operation budget is usually the largest percent, 50, 60% of your overhead cost for livestock production. And Jay made the point that, you know, even by reducing feed costs by like 10%, it could have a dramatic impact over, you know, and he boiled it down to, he said, that's about 2 weeks of forage. Like if you can find an additional 2 weeks of grazing, not necessarily by overgrazing, but maybe by changing grazing practices, or maybe by some range improvements, buying yourself 2 weeks of additional forage can reduce that overall feed budget by as much as 10%, which, you know, that's the lion's share of what your overhead operating is. And so again, it reminded me, being a range guy, is to how important that range is, because it's by far and away the cheapest feed that your cattle are going to consume. And if you have good condition range, then you're generally not having to do a lot of supplementation, because the animals are kind of self-sufficient when they're out on the range. So anyway, I hope we've enjoyed the podcast today. Again, we're open to any questions that you might have following the podcast. Feel free to look us up and shoot us an email. And we look forward to meeting with you again. Thanks.